Hi, friends. Welcome to the By Faith Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week this season, I'm talking with a guest about how they are pursuing devotion to God by fighting sin and learning to delight in Him. Through their stories, we're learning how we too can fight for wholehearted allegiance to King Jesus. Friends, as you heard me talk about last week, my new book, With All Your Heart, goes right along with this theme. And now is a great time to pre-order the book, because when you pre-order the book and input your purchase information on my website, christinehoover.net, you get an automatic download of the ebook version. That means you can begin reading it right now, today. In addition, you'll get a signed book plate for when your paper copy arrives, and a study guide. The book is really meant to be digested and discussed in community, so the study guide will help you and your friends do just that. And guys, if you pre-order before February 10th, you automatically gain access to an online book club that I'll be hosting, where I'll offer insights and mini courses that correspond with the book. Through the book study, I'll be sharing practical ways that you can recognize and root out false allegiances in your life. Those in the online book club get extra pre-order gifts as well, including a secret podcast episode in which I get vulnerable and share my own false allegiances and how I'm fighting for wholehearted devotion to Jesus. So don't wait. Pre-order today and then head over to my website, christinehoover.net, and input your purchase information. This episode was sponsored by The Good Book Company, publishers of Teach Me to Feel by Courtney Reisig. In these honest, personal, and uplifting meditations on 24 selected Psalms, Courtney Reisig looks at emotions we all experience, ranging from shame, anxiety, and anger, to gratitude, hope, and joy. For each, she shows how the Psalms give us permission to acknowledge how we feel before God and how they can help us to use those feelings productively and faithfully. Pick up a copy at thegoodbook.com or wherever good books are sold. What do your hands touch within a day? Devices, screens? Handle with Care by Lori Ferguson Wilbur is the book we all need to rightly understand touch and the ministry that it may be to the lives around us. Jesus stretched out his hand and touched the sick, the outcast, the bleeding, and the unclean. Somewhere in the mess of our assumptions and fears about touch, there is something beautiful and good and God-given. As Jesus can show us, there is ministry in touching. Learn more at handlewithcarebook.com. I am thrilled to get to share today's episode of By Faith with you. My guest is the host of the Journey Women podcast, Hunter Beelis. And of course, we had to talk about podcasting together. Hunter and her husband, Brooks, just moved to New Hampshire so that he can attend business school at Dartmouth. But before that, he was in the military, so Hunter knows a thing or two about transition. She shares with us about how transition has shown her own false allegiance to control and how she's learning to cling to Christ instead of control. She also shares how there have been unexpected joys in transition and what encouragement she would give for those of you listening who are navigating transition of any kind right now. Here, friends, is my conversation with Hunter Beelis.
Thanks so much, Hunter, for joining me on my podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Seriously, this is an honor.
Yeah, well, it's an honor for me because I love listening to your podcast, Journey Women.
It's mutual. By Faith is, I feel like we're kindred sisters.
Yeah, well, sometimes I see like people you interview, I'm like, oh, they're amazing. I need to talk to them.
Same. Russell Moore, props.
Oh, I love him.
It's so great.
That is so funny you just mentioned his name because he was in my dream last night and it was very strange. He was dressed in his suit and tie as he always is, and it was the weirdest thing. He just appeared in my dream.
That's happened to me before. I won't mention who it was, but yeah, that's super awkward.
I know. I'm like, is it awkward that I just said that on a podcast?
It's okay. Russell Moore. You can edit it out if needed.
Yeah, I love him. Well, I want to hear about your podcast because I love hearing beginning stories. How did somebody get into what they're doing?
I was actually thinking that too for yours. I was like, man, I should go back, and I didn't have time, but I was intrigued by the beginning of yours as well. Cause I think just having started one, you're just interested in how that began for other people, especially since it's such a big endeavor.
Yeah. So tell us for anybody who doesn't listen to your podcast, tell us what you're doing, but also I would love to hear how you got started doing this.
Yeah. So I have a podcast. It's called the Journey Women Podcast. It's really in the fringe hours. It's a minor thing in comparison to what I do with my family and loving my husband, but it does take quite a bit of time, as we mentioned, and it's a joy. I started recording conversations with my own personal mentors, actually in my closet at Fort Campbell in Kentucky when I was just, you know, in the evenings and during nap time. I had two little kids at the time, and Brooks was often gone doing different types of training and things like that for the military. And so I would push those conversations out just in hopes of being an encouragement to other women that I was actually interfacing with in real life, that my disciples, disciples of my disciples, that kind of thing, you know, just providing resources and things like that, that would just encourage them, really, number one, to look to the Word of God and to relish in the gospel, and then just to tether into the local church for encouragement. And so that's just kind of the hope behind every episode that we put over there. And it's just been kind of a grassroots thing. I didn't have any kind of platform or anything before launching the podcast, and it's been cool to see how the Lord has used it.
Yeah. Had you always kind of wanted to do something in this realm and you just kind of went for it, or what was kind of the catalyst that you made that step?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really good question. When I was at Fort Hood in Texas, podcasts were like a friend to me, because I was actually walking a lot on post during the day, because I worked as a personal trainer. So I'd work in the mornings from like 5 until 8, and then I would work in the evenings from like 4 until 8, which is everybody else's normal free time. So I had a lot of free time during the day when nobody else was really accessible or available. So I would just walk and listen to podcasts. And I wanted a certain podcast. I wanted actually a podcast that's really similar to yours, but I hadn't heard about it when I launched. When did you launch, by the way?
I think I was after you.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think maybe 2018. Okay, yeah. 2018.
Yeah, so I was June 5th of 2017. And I really wanted a conversation that I could listen to that would be both entertaining and that would point me to Jesus, and that would, you know, just serve as kind of a mentoring type conversation. Because with being so transient, moving around so much, I really longed for kind of mentors in my own life. And so, I don't know, I just thought, well, if nobody else is going to do it, then I'll do it. And so I started, and yeah, it's just gone on from there. I'm really surprised I'm still going, actually.
Yeah, because it's so much work.
Yeah, it's a lot more work than I anticipated.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I would love to know what has been the most impactful for you personally conversation that you've had on your podcast.
Oh man, there's so many. There are so many. I loved the conversation that I shared with Susan Hunt. She's on my mind. She just lost her husband last week. She and I talked about the local church, and the way that she just wept in wonder at the local church was such an encouragement to me. She's a hero of mine. I wish every guest that I had was just of her age and maturity, because she's just the epitome of what, you know, it's like to sit with a mentor. And so it was really an encouraging conversation, but so many of them have impacted me. It's been cool because it's just kind of a growing experience in my own life. And then the overflow is that other people get to kind of capitalize on those moments as well too, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, I think that might be something that would be surprising to people, is as a host, these are conversations that impact me personally. Sometimes they say something that really sticks with me and I have to think about it. That happened for me just recently, where I have been thinking about that conversation, and I almost feel like, or not almost, I know that God put that guest on my mind so that I could have that conversation for me.
I feel like every episode like that is for me, seriously.
Yeah.
And then it's amazing how the overlap between what's going on in my actual life and the content that we're releasing is so cohesive. And sometimes I'm like talking to my assistant and I'm saying, like, we really need to stop airing these really intense episodes because I cannot take the heat. Like, we're doing a Fruit of the Spirit series right now. And I'm like, oh no, I'm being squeezed like none other.
Yes. Yeah. Well, keep going. It's great what you're doing. Thank you. I do feel like you bring a lot of the guest, what you said about mentorship or wanting that. That's what you're providing. Mm-hmm. It's very encouraging to women who it's pointing people not just back to you and to your podcast, but to the mm-hmm. church and to mm-hmm. the Bible mm-hmm. and to resources that mm-hmm. are going to impact them. So I'm so thankful for
that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have a dream guest that you are still wanting to get on?
Oh, that's a great question. A lot of people have requested John Piper, and I'm like, you know, I'd be shaking in my boots to talk to Piper, but I'm down for it. That'd be pretty cool.
I would be very nervous too.
I've been very nervous for a lot of my conversations.
Yeah. Oh, well, I hope somehow that happens. He's we'll not listening to this. Has. I was about to say if he's listening, but he's not. Let's be honest. Okay, well, I would love for you to introduce your family as well. We just jumped right into your podcast, but tell us about your family.
Yeah, so I have a 5-year-old Hadley, a 3-year-old. Her name is Davy. She often gets exactly what I get, confused, just because her name is a little bit more gender neutral. And then I have a 10-month-old named Bo. My husband, Brooks, and I have been married for 8 years. He is currently studying at Tuck Business School at Dartmouth after having served in the military for 8 years. So we've just been journeying all over, traveling all over the U.S. together for the past 8 years. I think this is our 5th big move in 8 years of marriage. So, with lots of mini moves in between.
So how did you meet Brooks?
We were actually, this is such a cool connection. We were down at Pine Cove Christian Camps in Tyler, Texas. I know you're from Tyler.
I'm from Tyler. Yay.
Yeah. We were doing a discipleship program down there that's designed for college grads called The Forge. And so we connected through that. And then we were engaged after four and a half months of dating and married about 10 months later. So.
So did you know whenever because I was not expecting that where he was because he went into the military. So did you know when you met him that he wanted to go into the military?
He actually signed his paperwork to join the military, to enlist in the Army one day before our first date. I did.
Okay, so he told you I just signed papers.
Yeah, and I was actually like, I'm not going to go on a second date because I really had a heart for the nations and really had the desire to go overseas. Always felt like the Lord was calling me to be in a dark place, speak a different language, be in a different culture, but I never envisioned that happening in the heart of the U.S. So that was like, you know, kind of a plot twist for me.
Wow. Was that any sort of, I mean, do you have any family members in the military? Did you have an understanding of what the military would entail for you?
Not at all. My grandfather was in the Navy, but you know, I didn't know him during that time and didn't really know or understand the impact of the military was not looking to marry someone in the military. But the Lord had other plans and I'm so thankful.
So when you got married, where did you go from there?
Oh man. So we went straight to Fort Benning, Georgia, and we were married for 2 months before Brooks left for a long extended training called Ranger School. I think he spent about 3 months in Ranger School, maybe 2.5 or 3 months away with no communication except for letter writing. So it was kind of an intense jolt into the military lifestyle. And then from there we headed to Fort Hood, Texas, and we've been back and forth bebopping around in the South ever since.
Okay. So you never did go overseas.
Never went overseas.
Okay.
No, never did overseas. Brooks did during his deployments, but this transition to New Hampshire from Texas has been the longest one we've had yet. And definitely a different culture, different context, but not quite overseas.
Okay. Okay. Well, so I would love to, let's talk about transition because you have so much to offer us in thinking through transition. I'd love to hear about what have been the hard parts of transition. Even that, I'm thinking of that very first one, your transition into marriage, and then your husband goes away for multiple months and you can't talk to him. That's a sharp transition, but into marriage and military.
Yeah.
What have been the hard parts of transition for you?
Man, there's so many different types of transition, aren't there, Christine? Like I was thinking about this just as I was preparing for this topic and I'm thinking you have transitions in life seasons, you have transitions in jobs, you have transitions in moves, you have transitions welcoming people into your family and then saying goodbye when you lose people. There's just, our whole life is like a big fat transition, I realized through thinking about this. We have definitely faced a lot of moving around and we've also faced the transitions of different life seasons. And I think the most unnerving element in transition to me are the things that I don't even know to project. It's the things that catch me by surprise. It's the things that I'm not planning for. And the reason why that's hard for me is because it causes me to reckon with something that's actually true. It causes me to acknowledge the reality that I am actually not in control. That's the hardest element of transition for me.
Yeah. Are you a are you kind of a person who likes to plan?
I definitely love to plan. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So I like to plan in advance and I like to know what's coming. And so when something catches me off guard, even sometimes if it's something positive, it can be just really unnerving for me. So I think that's been the most difficult element. And I know there's so many difficult elements and it will all manifest differently based on the transition that whoever it is facing and based on their personality and their unique bent. So
yeah,
that's the hardest element for me for sure.
Well, and can we take a step back and just describe, if you could describe and kind of speak for the military wives out there, what it is like in the military? Because I think if you don't have experience with it, which I don't in my family, but where I live, we have a lot of military coming in and out. So I've learned from them. There's things I did not understand or realize about military life. And one of them being that I knew that you got assigned and told where to go, but I didn't realize how often I think that happens. But can you maybe give us a peek into what it's like in the military for specifically for spouses of those who are serving?
Yeah, it's just a lot of uncertainty. You don't really know a lot about what is coming next within like a generous time frame. At least that's been my experience, and every branch is different. So I'm coming from the context of an Army spouse. And then even within the enlisted versus officer side, which enlisted is people who did not go to college, officer side is people who did. Sometimes there's people who went to college that enlist. Brooks actually did that at the very beginning of his Army career. And that varies. It's crazy. So there's just a lot of variation, a lot of transition within the context of, you know, whatever duty station you're in, your guy is going to be off training. And it depends on, again, you know, his specific like branch and his specific position in the military. I'm trying not to use military jargon, but what he does. And with Brooks, he was often out in the field doing long periods of training. And then, you know, he would be at different duty stations training for a couple months at a time. And so there's always just this movement of them being gone, them coming home, preparing for a move, preparing for deployment, preparing for reentry, which is when they come home from deployment. So there's a lot of different dynamics, not to mention also friendships are very transient because people are always coming and going and they're not necessarily going to be on the same schedule that you're on. And you living in a military context or a town that has like a duty station nearby, you know, that impacts the civilian world as well because your friends are always coming in and out. So a lot of transition, a lot of change.
Yeah. So were you a person who would, when you moved to a new place, you would just jump right in and just go for it, even if you know you're going to be there a year? Were you kind of like that, or were you more just, I'm just going to be here a year, I'm going to kind of sit back and just wait for the next thing?
Oh man, because we were so far from family in each one of our duty stations, I had to jump in. I really felt like I had no other choice. I needed help. I needed community. I needed like both practical help and spiritual encouragement. So that's where I think I really started to become really passionate about the local church because I found such value in plugging into the local church, getting connected with a body of believers. And that was where I became really passionate about that. Mm. So definitely I'm more of the plug in quickly style. And I would even go so far as to look for churches in advance before ever even moving somewhere. And that might show a little bit of my control element that we talked about earlier. But it would be helpful because I would kind of have them isolated to where I knew I would go here or here. I could just try them out and then commit pretty quickly and start establishing relationships.
So. Yeah. I think that's one thing that I've actually been maybe surprised and learned from my military friends is watching them just jump right in. They don't hesitate because they know they've got a limited amount of time. And I would have thought that would have mean they would kind of step back and not really get plugged in, but I've seen the opposite. And I really I've learned from that. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing. I wonder though, in those transitions, you mentioned control. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of your primary thing that you run to instead of running to Christ? Or are there certain things that you found, oh man, I'm clinging to this rather than to Christ, and how have you learned to battle against those?
Mm-hmm. Man, this is like a sobering question because it caused me to really reflect and think, and I'm in the middle of a transition right now, like a big doozy of a transition out of the military and into this whole different culture and different climate and all of that. So I'm seeing a lot of these things come to head right now, and it sobers me. Sometimes I laugh because it's like, really? I'm really going to look to that? Like, it reminds me of my toddler when we're reading through the big picture story Bible, and she's like, they worshiped a cow? She's like, why? And that's exactly how I feel when I'm thinking through all these things that I turn to other than Christ. But like you said, I can spend hours obsessively researching things, whether it be a house or a church, or even just like in the midst of transition and change in parenting, like parenting tactics or different things like that, just to maintain some semblance of control. Here in the cold, dark days of New Hampshire right now, I am looking to cider. I am looking to hot chocolate. I am looking to dark chocolate. I'm looking to everything chocolate that I can, anything chocolate, basically, to make myself feel a little bit more comfortable with the twinge of discomfort just from the cold and the darkness. And I just eat. I'm telling you, it's bad. But then also, you know, when you feel lonely, when you're in the midst of a transition and you haven't really established yourself, you can easily turn to social media, scrolling and searching for some sense of belonging. All these different things that I do. There's so many. I manipulate in relationships with my closest people, my family. I'll start trying to control them by manipulation because shouldn't I just be able to control my people like in the midst of all this? And no, it never works. But
what do you mean by that? Can you tell us more about what do you mean by manipulation?
Yeah, I just, you know, I have little toddlers right now. And so I've seen myself, it's really been sobering, but in the midst of trying to navigate, like, what are we going to do from the hours of 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. when it's dark outside, that kind of thing. Just using like manipulative tactics in conversation with them to try and get them to behave the way I want them to and things like that, just to maintain some semblance of peace and control in my home. And coming face to face with just how out of control I am has shed so much light on all my idols, basically. So primary one being control.
So tell me how you are fighting that. I mean, I think knowing and acknowledging mm-hmm. that this is a false allegiance is super important, but then what do you do after that? Because I'm thinking, yeah. Aren't we all drawn to control? I mean, I just mm-hmm. think we all are. So I would love to hear from you. How are you responding mm-hmm. to that?
Yeah, it totally feels like that point in a race, which I haven't ran a race in a long time, but I was thinking about it as we were preparing because Brooks was getting ready to run a race for Thanksgiving Day. Do you guys do that where you run like the turkey trot?
I don't run.
But I almost never run, but on the turkey trot day, I am one that loves traditions and I will bust out the running shoes. And it's like that point when you're in the race where your lungs are kind of burning, like here, especially with the cold and stuff like that. And you're just kind of gasping for breath, for the amount of energy that you need and breath to just pray like, Lord, would you help me look to Jesus? And that's a lot of what battling looks like for me. Just whispering prayers like, Lord, would you help me look to Jesus? Would you help me look to Jesus? And the passage in Hebrews chapter 12 with that race imagery has been such an encouragement to me to cling to Christ in the midst of transition. And I just want to read a little bit because it'll set us up for what I want to share. But it says, therefore, and this is coming on the heels of, you know, the chapter about all of people of faith, which is such a wonderful chapter of scripture. Highly encourage anyone listening to read this in context. But therefore, because of all this, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God right now. So thinking of myself in the context of this great cloud of witnesses is such an encouragement to me as I'm running. And I'm telling you, I'm about 100% more likely to continue running any race if I am doing it in the context of community, in a group. And likewise, I'm encouraged in the midst of transition when you have this temptation to feel really lonely and really isolated because you don't necessarily have, you know, the community that you've had in former locations. If you're talking about a different, like a cross-country move or something like that. I mean, even if you're transitioning seasons, yeah. when your kids are going into like different schools and things like that, you don't necessarily have your place, or you're transitioning churches, or you're transitioning jobs. There's just such a feeling of isolation that comes with that. But remembering myself in the context of the great cloud of witnesses is such an encouragement to me, especially when I think about it throughout all of redemptive history. And we could talk about that. We could talk about all of it. And I think if your listeners want to be really encouraged, they should go back and read Hebrews chapter 11, because it does. It goes yeah. through the meta narrative of scripture, and it'll be like, boom, 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 boom. Look at all the people throughout all of redemptive history that have faced transition and change. It started in the garden, and really God gave us this command to go and to multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. There's a lot of transition even in that, even before the fall, before the hard elements of transition were ushered in. That was part of God's plan. But then there was the abrupt kind of sad transition, you know, when Adam and Eve took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and ate, and they walked in disobedience and they were ushered out of the garden. And we see that was like the saddest transition. And then from there, you see Abraham, you see Joseph, you see the people led into the wilderness when Moses comes and, you know, rescues them from captivity in Egypt, and all of these different transitions that all of God's people have endured throughout redemptive history, even into the exile. And then as they await, you know, the coming Messiah, which I feel like transition definitely involves so much waiting. But yeah. The thing that encourages me as we're talking about all of this is moving towards Christ. That's the thing, is that God didn't leave us here to endure transition and change and hardship and suffering alone. Instead, he entered into that suffering with us. He endured it to the uttermost. He overcame it. And then he promises, "Lo, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age." So in whatever suffering or whatever trial or whatever transition we face, he is our true and lasting comfort. And that is why I think this verse in particular in Hebrews saying, looking to Jesus, holding fast to Jesus, setting aside the idols that I'm so quick to cling to and clinging instead to Christ. That has been the way that I battle, you know, looking to these temporary fixes over Christ. And that's all by the power of the Spirit. And that's why the whispering of the prayers is such an integral part of that, because I really feel like as much as I'm holding, he is the one who's enabling me to hold. And I'm just so grateful for that. And so I constantly am looking to him, asking him to help me in that endeavor, experiencing a lot. It feels a lot more like failure, honestly. But then looking back on it, I just see all of God's grace. So it's a clunky process. It's a clunky process, but I'm grateful for it.
Guys, I know you're loving this conversation with Hunter, but I wanted to stop and quickly tell you about an event I'm hosting here in my hometown of Charlottesville, Virginia. On Monday, March 2nd, I'm hosting a free book launch event for my book, With All Your Heart, and you are invited. I'll be doing a live podcast recording, and Hannah Anderson, author of Humble Roots and my fellow Virginian, will be joining me as a guest host and turning the questions on me. In addition, I'll interview some local friends about how they're fighting their false allegiances. It's going to be tons of fun, especially because there will be dessert involved. Tickets are free, but space is limited. So if you'd love to come, which I hope you do, click on the link in the show notes or head to my website, christinehoover.net, to reserve your seats today. I can't wait to meet you. Okay, friends, here is the rest of my conversation with Hunter Beelis.
I've been reading through the Old Testament and focusing specifically on that wilderness time and watching as the people respond poorly. And it just matters so much where we turn. That word turning, or turning aside, turn to God. Remember, I'm in the part where Moses is saying, okay, you guys are about to go into the land. Remember everything that he's done. And he almost gives him this liturgy of remembering. Remember this, remember that, remember this. And it's like turning their minds toward God. And so it really is, even like somebody listening might think, well, just a whisper of a prayer, is that really going to do anything? But it is, because you're turning to God and asking him for the help and to mm-hmm. keep your mind on him. I love that. I love, mm-hmm. love that.
I'm going to have to go read that passage. I love that too. It's just the meta narrative of scripture and just looking back on, I have never related more, Christine, to the Israelites than I have in this situation right now. We were mm-hmm. moved here and then we were displaced because of a flood in our home. We've been living in a hotel for the last 7 weeks and we have another 6 weeks ahead of us. And the Lord's provision has been so evident. We're in a hotel. We've got the breakfast. We've got the cleaning lady, you know, I mean, all this, and I'm sitting around thinking, all I wish is, why can't I be in my house? You know, and I felt so much like a wandering Israelite, but I know that the Lord is using these circumstances to get the Egypt out of me in the same way he was getting the Egypt out of Israel in preparation for the promised land. And so that's an encouragement to me in the midst of my transition, looking back on my brothers and sisters in the faith and finding camaraderie there and also learning from their experience, hopefully a little bit.
I love how you said getting the Egypt out of me. That is such a good phrase. It makes me think about home. I mean, I think a lot of this in transition, we just long for this sense of home. Mm-hmm. And you literally are longing for a physical home right now.
Yeah.
Because of what you're in. But I think, I don't always think that we understand as Christians that home, that we are not home. We're looking mm-hmm. for something mm-hmm. that is not, we're not meant to have here. We're looking mm-hmm. for Egypt. We're looking either back or ahead. But I would love to know what you've learned through transition, specifically through this actual physical home displacement, about the Christian life and mm-hmm. and this idea of wanting to be settled or mm-hmm. to get home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just important to acknowledge that desire is righteous. That desire is not wrong. But like you mentioned, we are not promised that on this side of heaven. And so, man, I can't tell you this. Hebrews has just been such an encouragement to me in all of this. And in the next chapter, I think Hebrews 13, verse 14, it says, for here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. And our longings and all of that for stability and for comfort, they should point us toward the future hope that we have in heaven. You know, First Peter talks about, you know, this kind of hope that we have in an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, unfading, kept in heaven for us. The life of the Christian is marked by this hope that we have in Jesus. And so as we experience the discomfort, the twinges of discomfort that come with these transitions, they really serve as an opportunity for us to, like you said, look away from our present circumstances and look instead to the hope of eternity. And that is such an encouragement to me. I mean, I could go on and on. I could go on and on, but you look at Genesis and you look at this plan to go subdue the earth, fill it, and that causes you just to look to the new heavens and the new earth and to think like, what will this be like when things are brought in, when the Lord brings the kingdom of heaven down to earth, you know? And that just, that really is such a hope to me in the midst of transition, because it helps me understand that he sent us as ambassadors. He is accomplishing his purpose even through us now. And so in the midst of this transition, what is it that he wants to do in me and through me to bring the kingdom of heaven down to earth? Because this is not our home. This is not the end. And so I think that longing for being settled should press us into the hope that we have in being settled really in him. And even like that verse in Hebrews talks about how he's seated at the right hand of the throne of God. I mean, we know that we too are seated with him in the heavenly places. And so we can nestle ourselves in Christ in the midst of all of this. And that has really been the only encouragement to me in sometimes in my transitions, because I really truly feel like I have no other hope. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to nestle myself in Christ like that and to look to him as my hope to that degree, even though it's really painful sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're giving voice to the longing that is in part of being a Christian.
Yeah.
There's just this longing for home, for peace, for final peace. For,
yes.
And I'm not saying I'm saying a good longing, a longing right. for our true longing. Home. And I I think that's something that I want more and more people to give voice to, because I feel it every day. I feel it in the winter when it's dreary and cold and dark outside. I long for just that spring to come, you know? So yeah, let's talk about the transition you're in now, because you guys, you've mentioned it a few times, but you're moving out of military life into civilian life, and your husband is now a grad student, right?
Yes. So I asked him, I said, Brooks, how's the transition going? And he goes, rough. He's the one to sugarcoat things. But yeah, it's been, you know, different than we expected.
Why? What's different?
You know, I think that there was a predictability to the suffering that we were facing in the military. And for people who really like control, you know, at least we kind of knew what we were going to be up against. But what we're realizing outside of the military is that things are actually getting even crazier and we're continuing to navigate a lot of change and a lot of transition and a lot of hardship. But yeah, we're reminding ourselves that despite ever-changing circumstances, like, God doesn't change. His word never fades. It's just as real. It's just as applicable to us as it was in the military as it is in civilian life now. So we're really grateful for that.
Yeah. It does seem like in some sense, the military, everything's kind of told to you. So you don't have to make a lot of decisions or, you know, figure out what you want to do because they tell you what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now both of you are in this kind of open-ended, it seems like.
It's overwhelming. Yeah.
What does he want to do? What is he, did you say business?
Yeah, he's studying business right now. And so he's in the process of kind of figuring out where he's going to do his internship next summer, which will be pretty indicative as to what he does when he finishes his time in grad school. So kind of crazy.
And y'all have never lived this far north, right?
No, yeah, we haven't.
So that in itself, the seasons and the...
Yeah, we love it. We really, really love it. But it does have, there's a lot of learning that has to take place. As far as how do you de-winterize things and, you know, how do you take care of your kids when they have to put on a snowsuit to go outside? And how do you train your kid to wear a snowsuit when you're from Texas?
We moved to the East Coast from Texas. And I this is so weird, but I really did not even think about the actual clothing that my children would need. So when it snowed for the first time, I had nothing. They went outside in jeans, cotton socks, tennis shoes. You cannot walk in snow in tennis shoes. You fall down.
Yeah.
And you immediately get your feet wet in cotton socks. I mean, I did not even have a
concept. So true. All the Texans are like, what's wrong with that? Like, that's what you do. It only snows once a year.
Yeah. It was a whole new learning curve for me just in winter alone. But.
Yeah.
Well, what have been the joys for you in transition? Because I'm sure there's been some unexpected things that, like, oh, even this flood, you said God is using.
Yeah.
Tell us what happened, first of all, in your house.
Oh, yeah. We had like a little 1,200 square feet apartment, and the washer dryer unit was on the second floor. So we had a repair guy come and fix the washer. And probably three or four loads later, we decided everything looked fine. So we left the house and we went to a little fall festival and came home, and essentially the washer was actively dumping water into the second floor of our home. And it looked like Jumanji. There was water pouring out of the light fixtures. Every light fixture looked like a faucet. The windows were fogged over. So the whole entire house is essentially having to be rebuilt from the inside. So yeah, we're displaced in that capacity. But I was telling you before we started recording that it's actually been a really pleasant surprise in some ways. Because although we were packing boxes that we had just unpacked 2 months prior, we were doing that alongside people. And so we got to have conversations and really grow in relationship with the people in our neighborhood and really grow in dependence on our neighbors and on our friends that we had just recently made. And so they were so kind to us and through that transition. So I really feel like it deepened our relationships pretty quickly here, which is really such a gift when you're here for such a short time.
Yeah. You said that you're a control freak. So Definitely. Asking for help is probably a hard thing, because I'm just saying from, I'm not going to tell you how I know this, but
hypothetically,
yeah. Asking for a friend, how did you kind of, was that hard for you to ask for help, or is this situation just pushes you into, you have to do it?
You know, I have to be honest, I didn't have to ask for help because people were so incredibly gracious. That was really just a grace, because I probably would have tried to white knuckle it and tried to do a lot of things on my own. But yeah, I did send out a text message and let people know how they could help because they were asking. But there are people that were at our house, you know, they had exams the next day and they were at our house packing until after midnight. And it was just a real grace. I don't feel like there's anything I did to deserve it or even to ask for it. God just like poured it out on us. Yeah.
So do you think that that's part of transition too, is acknowledging and looking for those unexpected graces that God is giving you?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Because you can see it. I tend to look at things glass half full. I'm not going to lie. That's a gift that God's given me, I think, because what I do there is like, see, how can we fill this glass? but a lot of times I look at things from a negative perspective, and that's part of my personality. And so I really have to work to see things positively. And so that's something that I've definitely had to ask the Lord to give me eyes to see, are what are the graces that you're offering here? And I think a lot about the Israelites, you know, like they had the provision of manna, they had the provision of their sandals not wearing out. There were so many things that we can see outside of that, transition and trial that they were facing, that we recognize and acknowledge. And we're like, well, how could you not have seen? The Lord was so tangibly providing for you. But for someone who struggles with control, that the way that the provision takes place, you know, often you think that you need something that you don't, and the Lord knows what you really need. And so I think just nestling yourself in the doctrine of God's providence and acknowledging like this is from his hand. And so, and we know the Lord's character is that he's good, that he's kind, you know, all of these things, he's gracious. We know that he is using this to discipline us because we are his children and he loves us. And so what is it that the Lord is trying to show me through this situation? And what is it that he is, you know, how is it that he is trying to make me look like his son? How is he, making me more into the image of his son in and through this? And when I remember that, then I can see it all as grace, because it's like, really, that's what I want. I love having a home and I love having a place to host, and we're near the holidays. I love having a Christmas tree. But really, I think the Lord knew that making Christ in me is more important than some of the ways that I would like to share him with others. Maybe he wants me to look more like his son, to be more like his son, in my interactions with other people. And so it's a really hard, really painful experience to have your idols stripped away from you and to see more of your sin. But it's such a sweet gift, to get to press into Christ and to know that he is working in our lives, even if it's in ways that we don't expect.
I like that you're mentioning things that are good. You're saying a Christmas tree and a home that where people can come in. And earlier you mentioned chocolate and things. None of these things are bad. But sometimes God even removes those things so that we just have him. Mm-hmm. And it shows us maybe we do have a little more attachment than we need to those things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But sometimes he even strips away good things. It's not always the bad that he's taking out. So I think that's important to know, that we just, it's sometimes even really good things that God may say, you know what, this has been fine for you, but for right now, I want to remove that so that you can see more of me and what I want to do in you.
Yeah. And maybe even just loosening our grip on the way that those things present, because actually right now, Christine, this is crazy. We're experiencing kind of the most radical form of hospitality that we've ever experienced, and that we are actually living in someone's house. So we have been in the hotel for the last 7 weeks, and we just recently, right before, about a week and a half ago, right before Thanksgiving, moved into our friend's house. The guy is still here in Hanover. He's at school, and he's living with someone else so that we can live in their space.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, I long for a home. I long for these things, and I have one by God's grace. It's not the home I wanted. It's not the home that I expected to be in, but I have a home. And so, you know, it's just interesting how a lot of times some of those comforts that we're looking to and that maybe we're holding on to quite tightly, he might just be providing for us in other ways.
Yes. And to notice those. And sometimes when you were talking earlier, sometimes I'm a glass half empty kind of girl. And sometimes I have to literally think about that I am breathing. I may not be able to.
I go extreme like that.
Yeah. Like I may not be able to think of any of good thing right now, which is ridiculous because there's a jillion I could think of. But sometimes I just have to say, I have breath in my lungs because God is giving it to me right now. I don't sustain myself. So I can at least go to that, you know, and that's not even counting what I see in scripture and of Jesus on the cross and all those things. But there's always, God is always providing for us.
Yeah, he is. Yep.
So last question, I'm just thinking of the listener who's in transition. Maybe they're a military wife. Maybe they just had a baby. Maybe, you know, just they've lost a spouse. What are some truths or encouragements that you would give them that you yourself are learning right now?
Yeah, I think in the midst of it, it's okay that it's hard, and it's okay that you're tired. It's okay that you're weary. I mean, when we moved into our friend's house, I actually was quite overwhelmed just because I was like, I can't do another move after this. I can't. I don't know how I'm going to do it. This is going to be the eighth time we've moved houses in 8 years, and I just can't do one more. And I think it's a good thing just to acknowledge the hard, like you said, because we see all through scripture that that's where Jesus meets us. You know, I just am going through Matthew with the girls in my local church here, and we were in Matthew 5, and it's, you know, just all throughout, blessed are those who mourn, for those they shall be comforted. Blessed, you know, all these different the lowly position is the one where Christ meets us. And so I think it's good to be in a place where we're just able to say, hey, we really yearn for this. And we have no other hope. Cause there we place our rest in the finished work of Christ. There we acknowledge our own limitations and we press into the limitlessness of God. And we're just encouraged that when we're weak, he's strong. And one of my dear friends and mentors, she shared this little thing with me, and it's so simple, but she said, let's not live in like the grace that's been promised for tomorrow. Let's live in the grace that we have today. And sometimes you just have to take it day by day. Like you said, maybe it's breath by breath, but just keep looking to him as you do.
That's so great. Thank you for your time, especially at this time of your life where you're just all over the place. You said you're recording in a friend's place and you're living in somewhere else. I mean, you've just got so much going on. So I appreciate you taking the time to share with us.
Oh, well, when I saw the topic you wanted to discuss, was like, I think this would be a really helpful way for me to process. I actually don't do very many interviews. I find myself quite awkward on the other side of the microphone, Christine.
Not at all.
but when I saw that you wanted to talk about transition, it's a topic that I am, that's just near and dear to my heart, obviously. And I love having the opportunity to meet women here. Thank you for it.
Well, thank you. I highly encourage you to subscribe to Hunter's podcast, Journey Women. She does a tremendous job interviewing incredible guests that point us back to scripture and encourage our involvement in the local church, which you know I love. I've put a link in the show notes so you can subscribe to her podcast right now. Okay, friends, join me next week as I talk with Shona Murray about overbusyness, overactivity, and perfectionism, and how all of that led in her life to a time of depression and burnout. She helps us see how devotion to Christ means accepting our limits and learning to refuel according to the gifts he gives us. I can't wait to share this conversation with you because it was so helpful to me personally. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.